Hello and welcome to Coastal Drome Podcast. My name is Ian Wells and I've got Finn Leahy with me. It is the week of December 5th, 2022. And this is going to be our first more formal podcast episode in a little while. So been a busy year. We've been out doing lots of training and out in the field and flying the drone lots. And we figured, you know what? We should talk about emergencies and we should talk about emergency scenarios and what to do when you're presented with them. So Finn's going to talk and kind of throw some emergency scenarios at me. And you're going to hear me react kind of blind to them. I haven't really thought about them. I saw some of them, but like full disclosure, I haven't really thought too much about it. And maybe we'll try and turn this into a 30-minute episode about just being like thought process for emergency procedures. So Finn, go ahead. You can introduce yourself and then we'll go from there.
Hi, this is Finn. Just talking to you from this camera. Oh, so lame. And I'm a flight instructor and fixed wing pilot. And I prepared a few kind of scenarios for Ian, and I'm gonna talk through some of them now. So the first one, this is one about a flyaway, but I'll give you the scenario. So imagine you're doing a job, maybe up on a mountain or something, inspecting some power lines, and some bad flight planning happened, and you're on the shady side of the mountain.
Okay.
So you're getting some downdrafts and it's quite cold out and you start noticing maybe you're flying like a Mavic 2 or something and you start noticing that it's you flew it down the hill a little bit to get to the power lines and it's not really coming back up. Uh-oh. And coming back up to base, you're into the wind and the wind is kind of strong and maybe it's gusting 15 knots, 20 knots and your Mavic is having trouble going against the wind back up the mountain and slowly you're noticing this drone is going down the mountain.
This is not good. All right. So let me reiterate first to make sure that I've got the scenario kind of in my head here and see what my thinking is. All right. So we're doing power line inspection. It sounds like we're on the lee side of the mountain and it's windy and it's cold and 15 knots of wind is prevailing.
I was saying like maybe it's gusting 15 down the hill, 15 to 20 down the hill, but you're on a mountain. It's hard to know for sure.
Yeah, it's windy. And so we're dealing with something called mechanical turbulence here, right? So we've got wind rolling over the top of the mountain and then coming back down the mountain. And we're seeing a downdraft. So the wind is forcing the drone downhill, downwind, away from our location, from our takeoff and landing spot. And also, obviously, it sounds like a little bit lower elevation as well. So we're into a situation where we have control of the drone, right? There's no software issues or anything like that. Okay. So we have control of the drone. We've got a good radio link, I assume. But it's cold and windy. And now it sounds like the drone is no longer got enough performance to get back to the location that we took off from.
Exactly.
Okay. Do we have any alternate landing sites or were we really terrible at planning in this situation?
You were pretty terrible at planning around the power lines. It's not surrounded by trees around the power lines, but you don't have anybody down the mountain to talk to.
Okay. All right. Well, in this situation, okay. So, well, first thing I'm going to try and do, let's assume the trees are like 100 feet tall and we were doing this survey mission at 200 to 300 feet above. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to maintain the visual line of sight of the drone. I need to know where it is and I need to know that it's not blowing away any farther. Doesn't look like it. Seems like it's holding its position where it is, but it just doesn't have enough juice to come back towards us. All right. I'm going to descend and I'm going to descend the drone as close as I safely and comfortably can to the treetops into something called the boundary layer, right? So I'm going to get myself out of that constant high-speed wind and into hopefully an area of wind that's a little bit more protected, right? So 5 to 10 feet above the treetops, not too close because it's going to be harder to maintain visual line of sight at this point with all that trees and movement around the drone. We never talked about how far away I was.
Oh. Let's say that when this happened, you were 350 feet away from.
Okay, yeah, so far enough that the drone is getting a little harder to see, especially in a noisy visual environment like this. Yeah, so we're going to drop down into the boundary layer, right? Get closer to the ground. Hopefully, try and find our way not through the trees because then we're going to have a problem. It's potentially going to hit a tree. But close enough that maybe the wind speed's going to drop. And then we're going to try and climb towards us and fly more in the screen, so a bit more FPV like, while maintaining our visual line of sight of the drone, but use the gimbal, tilt the gimbal back up towards us so that we can see any obstacles ahead of us, and put the drone into sport mode, right? Get as much as possible out of the drone in terms of performance. But in this situation, if we don't have a safe landing spot upwind that we need to climb back into wind to get back to our location, and we only have the right of way around the power line, and if there's access to that and we know for sure we're not getting this thing back to where we are, we got to turn around and go back downwind to the right of way, find an open clearing somewhere that's safe to land the drone that we can hopefully get to by road or by some other access, right? So maybe we're running the line ahead of us or something like that, and there's usually a service road along transmission lines, so we've got some access. At least we know we can land the drone safely off the road so no truck drives over it, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But somewhere close enough that we're not hiking in or breaking any right away, right? So if the drone's not coming back, even in the boundary, we've got a problem. And we've got to act fast because you only have so many minutes of power. And you don't want the drone to necessarily come into a return to home situation because it might, if it's unable to return to home under manual control, it's not going to be able to return to home in automatic control. And it's going to probably blow away farther and you're going to lose location inside of the drone. So my two choices are try and get it back into wind. If I can't overcome that performance-wise, I'm finding a clearing somewhere ideally that I can get to by road, or if it's a really nice drone, by helicopter, I guess, but somewhere that it's easily reachable and not deep in the woods in between trees now upside down, right? So I would then land the drone, shut it down in terms of stopping the props, confirm I've got the GPS location on it, maybe turn on ESC beeping if I can get to it closely and quickly enough. If not, you're just going to have to leave it and then send a crew to go and get it. And hopefully you get it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that sounds like a reasonable way of dealing with this. The thing that we kind of alluded to was there was two major flight planning errors in this job. The first one was that you're on the leeward side of a mountain, which if you can avoid the leeward sides of mountains, that you should do that no matter what kind of drone you're flying. Like small fixed wings and helicopters have trouble climbing out of that.
Don't put yourself in a situation where you find yourself in a way that you can't get back, right? So you don't want to put yourself upwind of a project if you don't need to, right? Especially when you're at the bottom of your battery and you don't have performance to get back. I've experienced it with micro drones where it's gone downwind a little bit and the wind overpowered the drone, didn't have enough power, didn't have enough performance, and it didn't even have enough power to hold its position. It just kept drifting. So all I could do is I tried the boundary layer one, still didn't have enough power. I must have told you this for you to ask. This is weird. But anyway, I ended up landing in the snow and having to hop a couple fences to get the drone because it was so cold that it just wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So I've made mistakes.
Yes.
What do you think? Does that put that one to bed?
I think so.
Yeah. You said the second flight planning was also the alternate landing spot.
Yeah.
So lateral spot, right?
Yeah.
I on the fly had to choose an alternate landing spot because I had no other choice. Mm-hmm. That was really the second part there. What's another one?
Okay. So, let me start again so I get the sentence in the right order. Your friend asks you to get some drone shots of his soccer team playing soccer, and everybody on the team is okay with it. They all sign off and say, okay, we're down with having a mini flying overhead. We'll say we're with the mini. We're down with having a mini fly overhead of us for this job. You're at a city park where there's multiple fields stacked up against each other. During the course of the game, a stray ball hits your controller, cracks the screen, it hits the ground, and the drone starts flying off towards the other soccer fields where other people are playing games other people are playing matches who you haven't spoken to about the drone, so that we can't really consider them crew in this instance.
Okay.
So now your drone is flying away and your controller is, we don't know.
We don't know yet. Yeah. Okay. So the first thing is say I was using this smart controller. Well, let's break this down. So from a regulatory perspective, this is a micro drone. If you're saying we're using a mini. So, haven't broken any laws yet.
No.
right? Even with the group of people, if it's flying towards that group of people, we still haven't broken any laws yet. The one that I don't know is I'm going to assume that you've gotten permission from the municipality
yes.
to fly this drone at the park.
Yes.
Right? Because that's civic property. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a whole set of either bylaws or something that we need to confirm. So that would be the first, have I broken this law? The next thing is, okay, so we got to get this drone under control. Mm-hmm. It's flying away from us. So the first thing we look at is, okay, you said the screen is cracked. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say we're using this controller, the DJI RC. No matter what the screen says on here, there is two operating systems or two firmwares on this controller. There's a firmware for the screen. There's a firmware for the controller. The first thing I'm going to try and do is press and hold the return to home or flight pause button until I hear it beep. And maybe I'll start here going doo 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 doo. And that tells me that it's successfully sent the command to the drone to put it into return to home mode. That should stop the drone from receiving any other commands, and it should come back. Because maybe, like you said, it's been hit by a ball and it's mm-hmm. moving. So I'm thinking, okay, one of the gimbals is stuck, mm-hmm. right? If that doesn't work and I forcibly move the gimbals around and I can still see the drone at this point, I've maintained visual line of sight, and it's reacting positively or not reacting positively. Now it's continuing to fly back and the controller is toast. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to force the controller to turn off, okay? If it's not returning to home, I'm going to force the controller to turn off because at the start of my flight, I confirmed that the drone was in return to home if out of control mode on this flight controller setting. What that means is it's going to lose its radio link because I'm going to turn the controller off. The drone is going to continue flying for 2 to 3 seconds, be like, oh, wait a minute, I've lost my signal. And it's going to go into return to home mode. So controller, I've tested, tried, didn't work. And this is all happening within about 3 to 5 seconds, realistically. Gimbals are no good. I don't really care what the screen says, right? It's cracked screen, not a big deal. Cracked phone, not a big deal, right? If you unplug your phone from the controller, not a big deal. For DJI products, it's going to change based on manufacturers. But for DJI products, doesn't really matter. The controller has its own firmware that has basic functionality to send back commands to cause the drone to fail safe or return to home. If that doesn't work on the normals, I'm forcing the controller off, forcing the controller to hopefully go into a lost link scenario. If that doesn't work, we've got a flyaway scenario. The drone is out of control. Drone is doing whatever the drone wants to do until it runs out of energy. In this case, we know in a worst or best case scenario, worst case because it's a flyaway, mm-hmm. best case scenario for the drone is roughly, let's say, I think they advertise this at 34 minutes or mm-hmm. something like that for the micro drone with the small battery. Mm-hmm. We've already been flying for a bit, so yep. it's not 34 minutes. Yep. It's let's call it 20 minutes or less. Yep. 20 minutes or less at, let's say, full deflection on the stick at like 10 meters per second, right? So 60 meters a minute. Now I got to start thinking about math. 600 meters in 10 minutes at 10 meters per second. No, it's way more than that.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's 3.6 kilometers.
Yeah.
yeah. So it's not, it's going to go some distance. And what's going to happen is it's going to go X amount of distance until the battery level gets too low and the drone no longer accepts external commands. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm going to go into return to home mode. And then hopefully, again, it's going to come back because now it's in return to home. If it doesn't, at this point, you've probably lost the drone visually. You have no telemetry. Unfortunately, with these, when you lose the screen on these, there is no external display capability. There's no USB. You can't plug in your phone, I don't believe. So you don't have a backup. You'd have to rebind a second controller, and that's probably not going to happen. So in that situation, you basically have to keep an eye on the drone the entire time. And if it starts flying away, you got to get in the car and follow it or do something. If it comes back, it comes back. If it doesn't, it's going to land at its lowest point of battery and probably come straight down. Not crash, but land. And then if it hits a tree, crash. So you just got to keep an eye on it. There's some troubleshooting steps you can deal with, and then you've got to think about, well, worst case. Realistically, you're probably going to get it back with the return to home by shutting the controller off, as long as you're not running third-party software. I'm going to diverge into a little bit of a talk about that here. I've had, last week I had a flyaway, and it was running a Mavic 2 Pro with third-party drone mapping software on it. So it was running in something called virtual stick mode, where the drone receives commands from the controller, and the controller is running third-party software to say, move forward five, wait, take a picture, move forward five, wait, take a picture, move forward five, wait, take a picture. The controller, and this, I think this is one of your emergency scenarios anyway, so we'll kind of walk through it here, and this talks about it, but it's important to remember with third-party software, it may not act the same way as it would with first-party flight control software. What happened was the controller was so cold, it was plugged into power the entire time. It was so cold, and it was down to like 25% on the controller, so still an ample amount, but that last 25% just disappeared from the controller. It's a smart controller like this, not this one, but a similar one. And it refused to charge. It kept saying charging slowly. And when I'd look at it, it was fine. Look at it, it's fine. I took my eyes off the controller for 10 seconds because I was with an assistant. We had two pilots and we were working a mapping location. And I look back at it, right, because I was looking at the drone. I look back and I've got it plugged into power. So it's sitting on my heated seat in my car. Good radio line of sight, no problem there. But it shut off. Like, no matter the fact that it had power, the fact that it had heat going to it, it just decided, nope, I'm done with this. And no audio warnings whatsoever, just boom, off. So it went from 25% lights on the top flashing as it's charging, to off. And the drone was still flying its mapping mission. It's just happily doing its job, flying. It was in a position where it finished a line on the map and it was repositioning to start another transect. So it wasn't taking pictures and it was kind of doing like the slow, like it was flying at less than 2 meters per second. We had it set up to do a very slow mapping mission because of the altitude and the overlap we needed, lots of other things. Anyway, we had visual line of sight of the drone and I'm like, we had another drone in the air for two pilots, two drones, right? We were both responsible for our aircraft. And tell my partner, okay, look, you got to land, right? We need to get the other drone out of the air. And in the meantime, while I'm doing that, I'm trying to power on the drone. So it had probably about 15 seconds of power with it not running. So it caught up a little bit of power. And I was able to get the drone to power on. And it was power on, holding the return to home as I'm powering it on, basically, so that the basic firmware, not the smart controller, but the basic firmware in the controller was able to transmit a return to home command to the drone. So the drone could realize, oh, wait a minute, you're not actually telling me what to do anymore. Oh, okay, it's time to come home. Drone immediately 180'd, climbed up to its return to home altitude, so it's clear of all obstacles, which is great because I have no control, because as soon as I press return to home, it was the doo-doo-doo, beep, beep, off again. Controller was just not holding a charge. So, and again, smart controller, you can't rebind something in the air. You don't have a backup. Your only backup is having either good charge, good access to energy, heat in this case. Or if you're running an enterprise controller, you can hot swap batteries. I wasn't. This wasn't an enterprise controller. And this is one of those learning experiences of the limitations of non-enterprise hardware. So I get the drones coming back. And I tell my partner, like, okay, you either need to move the drone out of the way or land. They were flying a micro drone, so it was not a big deal in terms of like repositioning it. They had lots of juice left. And I'm like, this thing's coming back. We need to give ourselves a bigger buffer because I have no control. And it might be 3 meters off of its original takeoff spot. It could be accurate. It could be not accurate at all. So we gave ourselves a bigger buffer, moved the stuff around, set our we had the 16.5-foot give or take barrier set up for our initial takeoff area anyway to maintain bystander distance, and there was no people in between the drone and our spot, so we were good in that way. But it was still like, it's coming back. We'll just have to sit here and wait. Sure enough, it came back. It wasn't very far. It was like 200 meters away at most. Not even, actually. It was like 150 meters. And so it came back. But if the controller hadn't powered back on, right now I'm not sure what the drone would have done. It might have gone into a flyaway. We were in Class G airspace, so not a big deal. It was cold. It probably had about 40% left on the battery, maybe a little less. And it's like one of those that's like, oh, it's almost done, right? Mm-hmm. And just pushing a little bit there and not setting up a margin of safety. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lessons learned. The drone controller has to be at 50% or better. Mm-hmm. That less than 50%, it disappears fast. Mm-hmm. And temperature, yeah. Right? I don't know what to do about the temperature and the fact that it wasn't charging, other than the cells in the controller must have been below mm-hmm. zero. Yeah. And they shouldn't have been. There was certainly ample opportunities. It wasn't. We were still above the temperature limit. It was like minus two. I think the controller was definitely warmer than zero. Mm-hmm. But somehow something happened that caused it to cause problems. And I don't know for sure that it was because of the third party, but I do know that it was in virtual stick mode. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's like, okay, I know that in DJI Pilot or the Enterprise Flight Control, I can override the controller. Yep. I can grab the sticks and move the sticks. When it's in return to home, you can readjust the location of the drone. When it's in third party mode, it's not as well documented. And this is something that I'm going to go back and report more on. And, mm-hmm. and we'll talk more about it in the community a bit mm-hmm. too. But the third party software, because of the way DJI presents its SDK, this is going to be for any third party software. You've got to be aware of the potential for, if the software crashes. We had two circumstances. We had this one where the controller froze, literally froze, I guess. And then we had another one where we had an iPad running. It was on a Mavic Air. No, it was on a Mavic Mini 2. And the flight control software, totally different software, two different vendors, two different developers. The software crashed on the start of the mapping mission, and the drone, the software didn't appear to be crashed, but it sent a command, had an interference or something, and the drone just started climbing and climbing and climbing, and it just kept climbing. Mm-hmm. So we had to change the flight control mode from program or normal to Cine or Sport to force it to stop, and then it wouldn't accept a return to home until we did that either. So, challenging. So lessons learned mm-hmm. on that one for sure. Was energy and everything matters.
Yeah.
Temperature definitely probably matters. Mm-hmm. Definitely probably. power source. Mm-hmm. We had a monster lithium pack. We had my car is a giant driving battery pack. Mm-hmm. Everything was kept warm as we could, but it's still something happened.
Yeah.
Don't know it yet. And what I'm going to do as a follow-up to that is I'm actually going to do the same mission again in a more controlled environment, like farther away from people, et cetera, because I want it to go into flyaway state. Mm-hmm. And I want to force it into a flyaway state, and I want to see what would happen when the drone runs out of energy.
Right.
Right. So I want to get it, I'll get it down to like 20%. So mm-hmm. it's already starting to complain about power. Mm-hmm. Crash the controller by just shutting it off mm-hmm. while it's running the mapping mission, and then see if it will continue indefinitely until, I guess it falls out of the sky, mm-hmm. and I'm willing to accept that, or will it return to home when right. the energy level drops? So more to come on that. But yeah, that's a good scenario. And of course, mm-hmm. like we have internal logs and we track that. So that goes into our incident record mm-hmm. and all of this stuff, this investigation will go into it as well. Mm-hmm. So we keep that on hand and then we can learn from that in the future. Mm-hmm.
We should see what our time's at.
We're at 12:45, so we've been doing this about 15, 20 minutes. Does that sound about right there, Marshall? 24 minutes. Okay. So we're getting close.
Let's just do one more then.
Okay, we'll quick one.
So for our final scenario today, I'll give you one here.
Yep.
So a client hires you to do a thermal inspection kind of out in the bush. It's the forecast is raining, so you take the 300 with its IP rating mm-hmm. to do some thermal
How much is it rating?
It's raining. The amount of rain is not going to factor into this scenario.
Okay. Just because there's a limit. Like, yes. It's not like monsoon.
No, it's like the standard rain.
Right.
Like a little bit of rain.
Okay.
And when you left in the morning, the forecast said it was going to be 3 degrees Celsius. And when you get out there, the temperature meter on your car says it's more like maybe -2. It's still raining, though. So you go up and do the job. Maybe that was your first mistake. You go up and do the job. And as you're flying, taking some thermal imaging of the facility, you notice that the controls on the drone is starting to get a little bit sluggish. You go to move the gimbal, and the gimbal moves a little bit and then locks.
Uh-oh.
And then you look down at the controller, and you're trying to figure it out. Maybe you spend 4 seconds trying to figure it out, and all of a sudden the sounds that the propeller making change dramatically.
Uh-oh.
So what is your drone experiencing, and what are you going to do now?
Your drone is experiencing an idiot pilot.
Yes.
Because he flew it into an icing situation.
He sure did.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you're talking it's precipitation, and it's at zero or below zero takeoff.
Yeah.
If it were below zero in precipitation, it'd be snowing. So so it's probably like at zero where we took off from.
Yeah.
And you climb up that 400 feet. It's just enough that adiabatic lapse rate, mm-hmm. where the temperature drops as you climb and decrease in pressure, that it's turned into precipitation that's frozen. And because the props are spinning on the drone, they're warmer than the air around them. They've got that friction on them, so they're actually collecting ice.
Mm-hmm.
And the gimbal's collecting ice because it's in the air, and it's there, and it's probably warmer as well. Like, it's a computer. Everything's a computer. Okay. Well, there's really only thing I can do is get back down below, like to send altitude to hopefully warmer air and get this thing back on the ground, right? Because it's only going to get worse. If I'm starting to experience it, I probably have seconds, right? I don't have minutes. I have seconds before it's going to fall out of the sky. Spinning rotor systems in the air, as soon as they start accumulating ice, they're still moving at, let's say these things are spinning at 70, 80 miles an hour or more, right? Because of their rotational velocity. These things spin at like 10,000 RPM. It's only going to take a few revolutions, right? It only takes a wing so many passes through a cloud before it collects enough ice that it falls out of the sky. And you're doing this 10,000 times a minute. So yeah, you have seconds to react and deal with it. And the reality is, as a drone pilot, you're probably not going to notice that it has icing on it until it's falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
So the only fix for this is flight planning.
Yeah.
Right? Their only fix is to not fly into icing situation. So yeah, the IP rating in the Matrice is good. Temperature is a big factor.
Yeah.
And it's winter.
Yeah. So part two of the scenario.
Okay.
You get your drone on the ground. You start wiping it off with it was right above you. So you just hit down.
You've got an ice pick and you're hitting it with it.
So you're wiping it off and you say, well, I better call the boss because he needs to know that this job can't happen today. And you call the boss and he says, and you say, Mr. Bossman, sorry, we tried. It's an icing condition today. We're going to have to try again another day.
Yeah, we're grounded.
Yeah, and he's not an aviation guy, so he responds to you, that's completely unacceptable. It's just raining out today. You told me that this drone could fly in the rain. This is not acceptable. I need you to do this job now. It has to be done today. Your response?
Well, okay, so we're having a human factors discussion now about pressure from above and what... What is your job worth to you? Well, all right. So Matrice 30 or 300, we're talking $15,000 to $30,000 in hardware. We're talking about the very likely outcome of this drone crashing and then the potentially likely outcome of it causing secondary issues or putting someone at risk. The other thing is, these things all rely on vision sensors, right? So my response is my internal dialogue that I'm having with you right now is the same response I would give to this guy. Look, this thing relies on a lot of complicated technology. It's not able to fly, period, in icing. It just isn't, right? There's no conversation here where it ends and me taking off with this aircraft in an icing scenario. And here's the reasons why. It's expensive. Are you willing to risk a $30,000 drone today? Are you willing to risk potential liability and or onset? Like, say we're at a job site, you said, or something. So we hit other things. It causes a flyaway. It causes a crash. You lose the sensor payload if it's a Matrice 300 or something else. It's foolish. It's a reputation risk, right? Your insurance premiums are going to skyrocket as a result of making a claim for a new airframe, even if you have airframe insurance, right? Lots of people have liability. Not a lot of people have hull insurance. You really should on an expensive piece of hardware like that. And then you're causing the write-off an airframe. You're going to admit more paperwork. It's my job as a pilot is to be ultimately responsible for the flight. You are not on the location. You don't have the set of eyes that I do on this situation. You are welcome to come down here, drive down here, and take over command if you want as pilot in command, and that is your decision. But ultimately, you've hired me as an expert and as a certified pilot to do this job. And based on my experience, skills, and knowledge, this is not the right decision today. And that's the end of my conversation. If you feel that my services are no longer required, that's up to you, and have a nice day.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, that's kind of it. So the takeaway in that scenario is you can't let someone pressure you into doing something that you know is clearly stupid or unsafe. Like it's not worth it.
No. And your worst enemy is yourself.
Yeah.
Right. So if you can't have that internal dialogue with yourself and say, look, this is dumb. I'm not going to take off. I've been there. I've been in that in helicopters in real world, poor weather, and I've pressured myself into taking off, into bad weather, finding myself in a situation where it was really bad and really wishing I was on the ground. A lot of pilots have done it. I think if they haven't already, they will at some point or another find themselves in a situation where they wish they were on the ground. Because all we want to do is please the customer. Right. We want to get the job done. We want to get paid. We want to build that experience, get those hours, get this aircraft in the air and get back down. But the hardest decision is to say no and say, we'll try it another day. It's an impossibly hard decision. So don't for a second think that it's an easy one to come by.
Yeah. And honestly, I can't think of a single job that has to be done today.
No.
It's not worth risking someone's. It's not worth risking your career as a pilot. It's not worth risking property, your drone, or if you're in a worksite situation, it's not worth risking someone getting injured in that scenario if it were to hit somebody. So,
Well, and even in a life or death scenario, working in search and rescue, you don't want to turn one emergency into another emergency, right?
Exactly.
You don't want to compound. So, right, there's decision making and everything on that, it just becomes something that's you just don't want to push past that. Right. You want to eliminate any additional risk. Yeah. So I think that's it for this week. That's couple scenarios, a couple little chats about them. That's kind of cool. Tell us what you think in the comments or if you wanted to send us an email, you can talk to us a bit more. Maybe you have some ideas or some questions about similar scenarios. I think that's kind of a cool thing. At some point we're going to have, Anne-Sophie Riovel-Bouvier on to talk about the RPAS SMS, the safety management system that they've been working hard on. And it kind of goes into this, right? The lessons learned and the openness and the communications about incidents and accidents and how everyone can benefit from sharing knowledge. So that's kind of a nice segue to that. And so future episodes, we'll talk about that and hopefully have her on. And in the meantime, you can reach us through social at Coastal Drone Co. is our social handle for pretty much everything. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, even TikTok. And or you can write us an email at info@coastaldrone.co or visit us on the web at coastaldrone.co. Or find us on Facebook. I think I mentioned that, but Facebook is another one. And so you can, or if you're a community member or a member of Coastal Drone Pro Monthly, you can find us on the community and chat further about this. Probably there'll be a discussion thread right underneath this episode anyway. So anyway, thanks for listening. We're going to cut it there and we'll see you next time.
Cheers. Have a good rest of your day.
Bye-bye.